Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the CSIS Statements Forum. My name is Seda Çiftçi, and I am the CSIS Turkey Project Program Coordinator. We are honored today to host His Excellency Bülent Arınç, the Speaker of the Turkish Grand National Assembly. Speaker Arınç will speak for about 25 minutes, and he has kindly to take questions after his speech. We are also honored today to have the member of the CSIS Board of Trustees and former National Security Advisor, the Honorable Branskov Croft, to introduce Speaker Arınç. Actually, without further ado, I would like to invite General Scowcroft to introduce our speaker. General Scowcroft.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The speaker would prefer to make his remarks seated, so I will do the same. On behalf of President Hamery, I'm pleased to welcome all of you to the CSIS Statesman's Forum. And as you know, our guest this morning is His Excellency Bülent Arınç, the Speaker of the Turkish Grand National Assembly. This is a historic first. I know that the Speaker has visited the United States before in 1998 and 99 when he was a member of the Grand National Assembly. However, he's the first Speaker of Turkey's Parliament to visit the U.S. in his official capacity. It's a long overdue visit, and we're all delighted that you have honored us by your presence today. Speaker Arınç was born in 1948 in Manisa, Turkey. After receiving his law degree from Ankara University, he worked as a lawyer until he was elected to Parliament in 1995 from his hometown. He was re-elected in 1999 and in 2002. He was elected Speaker in November 2002 after the historic victory of the Justice and Development Party in Turkey's parliamentary election, a victory that has ushered in the first stable parliament in decades. Mr. Speaker, our two countries have different governmental systems. But one thing we have in common is the importance of the legislative branch, and particularly of the role of the Speaker. I'm sure that any American president wishes at times that our Speaker, at least, was not so powerful. But you know that our system couldn't function without a strong Speaker. As you know, I myself have a long association with your wonderful country. While I was in government and now in the private sector, I've been a strong advocate of close relations between our two countries. They were critical during the period of the Cold War, and in my opinion, they're even more critical now as our two countries deal with the challenges of the post-Cold War and post-September 11th world. Along with Prime Minister Erdogan, you have led an impressive transformation of Turkey in less than 3 years. The 8 reform packages that the Grand National Assembly has passed have transformed Turkey's political and economic landscape. They've been instrumental in the EU inviting Turkey to begin accession talks in October. I know there still are some doubts in some EU countries about the wisdom of Turkey's eventual membership. But I believe, and I think this is a view most American observers share, that the EU will be strengthened by Turkish membership and that the U.S.-Turkish relationship will be similarly strengthened by such membership. Mr. Speaker, you're the first in a group of distinguished Turkish leaders to be visiting Washington in the next several weeks. We welcome your visit, which we hope will be repeated regularly. Your presence is important to strengthening our bilateral ties. Please welcome the Speaker of the Grand National Assembly, Mr. Bülent, His Excellency Mr. Bülent Arınç.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Scowcroft, distinguished guests,
I would like to express my heartfelt thanks for this opportunity to address the distinguished group of friends at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, which is the one of the leading think tanks in the USA. The important activities organized by your center in the service of promoting international understanding are indeed praiseworthy. I feel privileged to enjoy your company thanks to the invitation extended by my distinguished friend, the Honorable Speaker, Mr. Dennis Hastert. Distinguished guests, every time I visit the U.S., I see an opportunity to look to the world from a different angle. My visit to the United States have always enabled me to observe issues from the distance of another continent and another longitude. It has also enabled an enrichment of ideas in the cultural field. In fact, world history has mostly been shaped in the old continent, as some would call it, on which Turkey is located. The humanity has established civilizations and given birth to new cultures on those soils. I believe in the existence of an invisible flag of civilization. This flag was handed over from hand to hand among the human races throughout thousands of years. The geography I live in is the land where that flag was passed on several times, I believe. The civilizational flags of the Hittites, the illustrious, magnificent Roman, Byzantine, and Ottoman empires waved on the territory I was born. Thus, my territory has been the cradle of a very rich cultural heritage. Each one of them had represented a different goodness, beauty, and glory. The sacred values of humanity were molded and matured on this basin of civilization. Each civilization had tried to glorify the human being as the most sacred being of the world. All of them had vied for the happiness and welfare of humanity, irrespective of colors and races. Unfortunately, seizing this happiness and welfare exacted heavy costs on humanity. I believe the American continent joined somewhat later in the amazing story of the adventure of humanity. Taking into account the span of history of the old world, the exploration date of this continent may be considered rather recent. Recent as it may be, the story of America's participation in the journey of humanity has been interesting. One of the outstanding presidents, Woodrow Wilson, attributed a divine mission to this continent, and I quote, "This continent was left to us unused by the will of God. It waited for the peaceful nation who gives utmost importance to human rights to arrive and settle and to establish a non-selfish unity," unquote. This is indeed a very exciting thought. The reluctance in participating in World War I was an expression of his deep attachment to his words. Distinguished guests, today the United States of America is the most important player in the ongoing adventure of humanity. I believe that the flag of civilization was carried to your continent and is now hoisted on the mast of your country. Today the history of humanity is being influenced by every achievement of the U.S. in science, industry, politics, medicine, and culture. Being a powerful state in the world is not only a source of pride, but also requires responsibility. This responsibility is fulfilled by using the power that has been given to you for the happiness and future of humanity and acting, in the words of President Wilson, in accordance with the divine will. America had also paid a heavy price during its active involvement in world wars as a great power. One of the outstanding presidents during the times of war, Franklin Roosevelt, expressed his lessons learned as follows, I quote, "We learned that we cannot live alone in peace. Our own welfare depends on the welfare of other nations far away. We learned to be the citizens of the world and member of the world of humanity," unquote. There is no doubt that the rest of the humanity is expecting a lot from the U.S., who is a member of the world of humanity. cureless diseases, ongoing global starvation, people who cannot even find clean water to drink. One can add to those problems education, fair distribution of wealth, environmental problems, and several important issues. Those issues should undoubtedly be dealt with by all the members of humanity. However, being a leader and having the strongest economy and military power of the world necessitate a different responsibility. Ongoing crises around the world await just and peaceful solutions. Solutions must be found to those problems in accordance with democratic and universal human values, although at times this may not be fully compatible with our interests. Democracy is not a virtue to be defended only when doing so benefits our country. We must act on the requirements of democracy even when that may be to our disadvantage. This is what peoples that live in crisis-ridden regions of the world expect from the U.S. President Thomas Jefferson, as he was reading the Declaration of Independence with great passion, sincerely used similar virtuous words when he asked for justice, equality, liberty, and moral values for the suppressed nation. I quote, all men are we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, unquote. Leaders of great states should follow the mottos of these brave men who have expressed such virtuous words in order to bring about happiness and justice to people's lives. Distinguished guests, our world is struggling against global predicaments such as global environmental problems, global terrorism and economic crises, political problems and wars. Our contemporary world needs virtuous people and virtuous words today. These peoples of the countries desire to hear the words of these wise men rather than the sounds of arms and weapons. I believe the geography in which I live, surrounded by the Caucasus, the Balkans, and the Middle East, is the region that has been the most problematic in the preceding century. Therefore, it is the people of this region that require such virtuous voices the most. Here once again, the great importance of the strategic partnership between the United States and Turkey becomes once again prevalent. I believe the happiness of the people can easily be provided by our partnership and cooperation. I will make comments on our relations and the parliamentary activities in the second part of my speech. My visit as the first visit as of a speaker of the Grand National Assembly of Turkey is coinciding with the 85th anniversary of the inauguration of the Turkish Parliament. I think this coincidence is very meaningful. There are dates that nations are proud of. The date of the inauguration of our Parliament, April 23rd, 1920, is one of the most meaningful dates for my nation. Our people started the struggle for freedom and independence under the leadership of our national leader, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, on that very day. We are celebrating in 2005 the 85th anniversary of the National Grand Assembly of Turkey as the National Sovereignty Year. Our motto is full democracy in Turkey and parliamentary diplomacy in the world. Turkey has made important progress in democratization. The Grand National Assembly of Turkey, as a representative of the free will of the Turkish nation, has taken great, gigantic steps in cooperation with the government and the opposition party. These reforms have played a great role in the fulfillment of the Copenhagen criteria, culminating in the EU decision to start the accession negotiations with Turkey. On this occasion, in behalf of our people, I would like to reiterate our thanks for the very valuable support given by the US in every step towards the membership of Turkey to the EU. Thanks to her secular and democratic structure, Turkey has become an inspiration for her region and the world. In that sense, Turkey is monitoring with great happiness and excitement the democratization winds blowing over her region and making concrete and original contribution in every possible manner. The value added provided by Turkey is very important for supporting the democratization process in our region. Turkey has been continuing her contributions since the G8 summit held last year in Sea Island as the co-sponsor of the Democracy Assistance Dialogue. At the same time, Turkey fully supports the reforms on democratization and good governance at every occasion in the international fora, including the Organization for the Islamic Conference. These characteristics of Turkey add to the level of friendship and allied relations between Turkey and the U.S., the dimension of her status as a partner for democracy. There is a concrete and positive common agenda ahead on the relations with the U.S. This common agenda allows us to move in a complementary way against difficult issues in our region and the world. In this context, Turkey is making special efforts to strengthen the Euro-Atlantic ties within the alliance. Following the NATO summit held in Istanbul last June, the visit of President Bush to Ankara brought Turkish-American relations to its peak. Recent visits of delegations composed of dignitaries from the U.S. Congress and their meetings with the members of the Turkish Grand National Assembly facilitated useful exchange of views. I'm also always more than happy to meet these esteemed representatives and find our contacts very useful. Honorable Deniz Hastert, Speaker of the House of Representatives, visited Turkey in 2002 and most recently had a stopover at the Incirlik base on December 2004. I would like to stress that it was indeed a pleasure to talk to my distinguished friend, Mr. Hastert, on both occasions. Turkish-American relations have entered the new year with an intensive diplomatic traffic. Frequency of the contacts between the two partners, including Dr. Rice's visit to Turkey, demonstrates the strategic nature and vibrancy of our relations. President Bush, during his visit to Turkey last year, has stated in his impressive speech at the Galatasaray University in Istanbul, I quote, "Turkey with her powerful secular democracy is a close ally of free countries. Turkey is a model with her 150-year democratic and social reforms. Turkey can rely on the USA's support and friendship," unquote. I would like to emphasize that in the same manner, the U.S. should also rely on Turkey's friendship and support at all times. The reason why our relations are considered strategic is due to the positive influence of our solidarity in a wide geography and on many different subjects. Our partnership creates a positive impact on a very wide range of issues, extending from the support of the democratization to the fight against terrorism and from the promotion of the transatlantic relations to the territorial and national integrity of Iraq. Whether at the bilateral or NATO context, Turkey cooperates with the U.S. towards the objective of establishing peace and democracy in a broad geography spanning from the Balkans to the Middle East, the Caucasus, and Asia. As for the ongoing political process in Iraq, our two countries share the same views on reinforcing the territorial and national integrity of Iraq in order to become a democratic and peaceful nation and a respectful member of the international community. In the time ahead, difficult turning points await Iraq. Turkey provides concrete support for the development of Iraq. The opening of the second border gate in Ovaköy is very important in order to achieve the potential of our support and contributions. We do have specific expectations and concerns regarding Iraq. Turkey, as a country who has deeply felt the pains of terrorism, has always advocated the necessity of international solidarity, called on the entire world, and acted as a vanguard to that effect. I believe that Turkey and the United States of America must be in even further cooperation and solidarity now more than ever before in order to rid the humanity of terrorism. The terror organization PKK, which has aimed at Turkey's secular, democratic and modern existence, should not find refuge on Iraqi territory. This is as greatly important for our country as for the real success in the international fight against terrorism. In the Middle East, resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian problem is another issue to which both Turkey and the U.S. pay great importance. Turkey, being a friend of both Israel and Palestine, will continue her efforts to this end in the time ahead. We attach great importance to the development in peace, democracy and welfare of the friendly and fraternal people of the Caucasus and Central Asia, which are regions of common interest and solidarity for our two countries. Distinguished guests, since last year, 13 presidents, 2 speakers of parliament and 12 prime ministers visited our assembly. An overall 320 international delegations visited our groups and commissions. At the same time, the Turkish Grand National Assembly has realized 650 international contacts with its counterparts. In this framework, I would like to express with pleasure the close working relations have been established between the Turkish Grand National Assembly and the U.S. Congress. The structures such as the Turkish Caucasus, which already has over 65 members, the Congress Working Group established by the former U.S. Congressman and the Turkey-USA Friendship Group have been enriching the parliamentarian dimension of the relations between our two countries. At this point, I would like to thank to everyone who have contributed to this successful achievements. Our bilateral relations, having such an important and intensive agenda, also contain various issues. As Mr. Tip O'Neill, former chairman of the House of Representatives, once said, I quote, "All politics are local," unquote. Accordingly, those who make politics only with local concerns are seen to try to exploit legislative organs for local political gains. At this point, we find it wrong that the U.S. Congress should be forced into a position of passing judgment on historical issues. It must be incumbent on us all who believe in the need for objectivity vis-à-vis history and who attach importance to Turkish-American relations to oppose such narrow-minded attempts. Relations between Turkey and the U.S. have been progressing in a wide spectrum of topics towards important common objectives. What unites us is by far more pronounced than what may divide us. In that sense, there is no reason why we should not be successful in addressing the risks and threats that we are both facing. In the 21st century, the common objective for all nations is for humanity to live in peace, democracy, welfare, and the respect for human rights. The existing strong alliance ties and deep friendship between Turkey and the United States of America must be strengthened even further. I thank you for your patience and attention. Now I am ready to take your questions if you should have any. Thank you again.
Speaker Erinç, thank you for your comments. And I guess we have half an hour left for question and answers. And please identify yourselves and try to keep your questions as brief as possible to allow time for as many questions as possible. Mike. Can we get the mic? Okay. There? Okay. No, there's another out there too.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for those eloquent words. I wanted to follow up on the question of Turkey's role.
It's working.
All right. Sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. This is Patrick Cronin from CSIS. Mr. Speaker, thank you again for those eloquent words. I wanted to ask you briefly about Turkey's role moving forward the next 4 years in promoting democracy. So that's the problem. The interpreter can't hear. Well, what would you suggest? Maybe even closer to your
I can help him, so, or...
Yes.
Tamam.
Nereden? Kürsüdeki mikrofon. Okay. Sorry about the inconvenience, so. Can you ask a question from here?
I
can. Okay, we're going to invite everyone to the podium, so...
Apparently. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, thank you for your eloquent words. I'm Patrick Cronin from CSIS. The First Lady, as you know, was in Amman, Jordan recently, and she was giving very eloquent words of her own, I believe, about the role of women in the Middle East. And that is part of a larger question about promoting democracy, opportunity, good governance throughout the greater Middle East. In your speech, you noted Turkey's vital role in helping to promote a democratic dialogue at last year's Sea Island Summit and beyond. The question is, moving forward over the next few years, I know the First Lady said that we have to be realistic about the expectations for democracy to take hold, but I'd be very interested in your view and in a sort of a Turkish view on what is the opportunity in even the short term, to seize positive opportunities for democratic change, including the role of women.
Çok teşekkür ediyorum.
Thank you for this question. In relation to our region, the participation of women in the political life and the granting of them their political rights and to have more women, female representatives in politics, to see them more in local politics is a very important issue for us all. Turkey has granted electoral rights to women much earlier than most of the Western European countries. It was in the beginning of the 30s that women were granted electoral rights for local elections, and then it was in 1935 that they could participate in general elections. And that continues also today. The numeric representation may be not very high. The ratio of women parliamentarians amongst the men is 4%. We have 25 women MPs in a parliament of 550. However, in our social and political life, women have all the opportunities to take part. In the neighboring countries, democratization, the increase of freedom and fundamental rights and responsibilities is also a target that we share. I mentioned in my speech in relation to the neighboring countries that there are certain crises and problems there, and that in the solution of these crises and problems, Turkey and USA, along with other nations, had a responsibility to carry, that we had to cooperate. Turkey is a democratic, secular, social state governed by law, and this is the main principles that our people adhere to. We would like to work together in democracy in our neighborhood. We are against totalitarian oppressive regimes where the sovereignty is not shared by the people but is concentrated in the hands of a limited group. Such models do not serve Turkey. They do not serve the world either. To give you an example, we had in the past very serious difficulties between Bulgaria and Turkey because Bulgaria was governed by a totalitarian system which oppressed its people. But in the beginning of the 90s, there was a transformation in Bulgaria, and now Bulgaria and Turkey are very close friends. And also with other neighboring countries, we have strengthened our relations the more democratized we became, and this increased the happiness of our people. I don't know whether I have fully answered your question, but just for the larger participation of women, Turkey is working on that issue, and also we are trying to enlarge women's participation in social and political life also in the neighboring countries, that equality of that gender equality is guaranteed in all the constitutions. This gender equality is expressed in several articles of our constitution, and more recently in the recent constitutional amendments made for fulfilling the Copenhagen criteria, we added to the relevant provision in the constitution a stronger phrase indicating the responsibility that the state carries to that effect. Thank you.
Sorry for the inconvenience, but you have to, I think, come to the podium because she can't pick the voice from the mic. Mic doesn't work. Okay. Can I tell? Yeah, to me.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I have a little surprise for the Speaker. He probably didn't suspect that the Bulgarian ambassador is in this room this morning. So I'm here to say good morning and most welcome, to the extent to which I live in this city now, to the Speaker and his party, and just to bear witness to what he said. It is true indeed that we have an excellent relationship with Turkey, never as good as it is now. And more importantly, I would like to make an official statement, which is no doubt very well known to the Speaker. Bulgaria is among the strongest supporters of Turkey's bid for the European Union, and we will very much hope that we will be in our own modest way helpful in everything Turkey has to do from now till the completion of that complicated process. So I'm happy to salute you, Mr. Speaker, and your party.
Çok teşekkür ediyorum. Katılımcı listesine baktığınız
Thank you very much. When I looked at the list of participants, I saw that not only the ambassador of Bulgaria, but also the ambassadors of other countries were present, and I was delighted to see the lady ambassador of Bulgaria amongst us, and that she also reiterated my words that we share excellent relations with Bulgaria now. It seems that Bulgaria will be joining the EU before Turkey. It will be around 2007, I guess. We would like to extend our relations with Bulgaria even further. In the coming weeks, there will be general elections in Bulgaria, and I hope that the Bulgarian people will again be successful in establishing a democratic regime.
Acaba herkes bulunduğu yerden sorsa?
O zaman translation yapamazlar.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. Speaker. Carol McDonovitz from the Congressional Research Service. In your speech, you made reference in general terms to several of Turkey's actions as what has normally been called the bridge between the United States and the Middle East, the bridge between United States and Europe. I was wondering if you could provide some specifics of what Turkey is doing to encourage better transatlantic ties between the United States and Europe, and what it is doing to advance the Middle East peace process. Thank you.
Evet, hanımefendiye teşekkür ediyorum.
Thank you, madam. In 1998 and 99, I visited the United States as a member of a parliamentarian delegation, and I had visited you in your office. It has been 7 years since then, and I take it a great pleasure in seeing you again here, and I know how important your function is, madam. Now, Turkey has a bridge function between Asia and Europe, with Eurasia. Geographically and geopolitically, Turkey has a very important position, and also politically. Always a bridge role is being attributed to Turkey, not only in the geographical sense, because it has been also the cradle of civilizations and also for the further development of transatlantic relations. This is a correct definition. I would like to consider this issue from two perspectives. You asked a question about the Middle Eastern peace process. I would like to add to that the Iraqi dimension as well, with your permission. These two issues are very important. Turkey sees the establishment of lasting peace in the Middle East in the solution of the Israeli-Palestinian problem. If there is lasting peace there, if that problem is solved, not only peace will be established in that region, but also throughout the world, because the negative impacts of that problem are extended to other regions in the world. Many years have passed, 50, 60 years has been since the establishment of the state, and there has been only bloodshed, sorrows, wars, unhappiness, and everybody is fed up with that. People are expecting a peace, stability, security, that there is no tears shed. I make no distinction between any people, but I believe that every single nation is in need of this. There is no sense in repeating what has been done in the past. A peace process had been started a few years ago, a roadmap was prepared, but it has been interrupted, as you know. However, after the death of Arafat, a new impetus has been started with the election of Mahmoud Abbas as the successor of Arafat, has given us the feeling that a new chance can be grabbed. Together, both with the Sharon government and the Abbas government, an improvement can be realized. Even if it is not the full implementation of the roadmap, we see that a certain progress is being made, and I believe that this process has to continue and has to be supported. That support can be twofold. First of all, Mahmoud Abbas should be supported, strengthened, and his peace initiatives should be backed up. Because both Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian people need this. The negativities of the past, we know who has had a finger in that, but today a new hope is being shaped on the basis of all this sorrow and tears. And I think Israel needs it too. The Sharon government should leave aside what has happened in the past and make a new beginning with new hopes. And I think the Israeli government should be supported in all these initiatives as well. I do not want to enter into greater details about what is Israel, what their relations with the U.S. is, what their agreements are, because there may be certain ties what we would not know ourselves, but I am trying to look at things with a naked eye. We politicians, we start with a dream, and we make plans in order to fulfill those dreams, and there are moments when we despair, when we are full of fear. However, we still hope to attain our aims, and in my opinion, between Israel and Palestinians, I believe this moment has arrived, that something good can be built up as from today. The things that were envisaged in the past may perhaps be realized today. You may be calling me a sentimental fool, but I think the pains in the past should be taken into consideration for in building up the future. Now, with regard to Iraq, the 3 years has passed since the intervention there, and a great suffering is dominant in Iraq. Every day there are suicide bombs, terrorist attacks, and people are being killed every day. We are witnessing this with great pain. This is nothing to be happy with. Personally, I know personally very well that the Saddam regime was a dictatorship. Saddam was a ruthless dictator. This has not been limited to Halepche. He has done ruthless actions towards his own people, and hundreds and thousands of people were killed during his time. It was a great happiness for all of us to see Saddam and this dictatorship gone. There is no question about that. But after the fall of this dictatorship, what kind of a new government, what kind of a new regime will be established in Iraq, and how positive repercussions this new regime would have? This is the main interest of Turkey. You know that we place a great importance in upholding the territorial integrity and political integrity in Iraq. If we fail to do that, Iraq will become a huge problem area. Thank God that this integrity has been kept until now. It was weakened, but it was upheld. So this is important. Also, the happiness of the Iraqi people is important, not only for us, but also for the Americans, I presume. And the beginning of a new era is the elections held on the 30th of January. The elections may not be the perfect example of political elections. There may have been deficiencies. Certain recommendations of Turkey have been disregarded, but elections are elections, and every election should be seen as a benefit and should be seen as the best argument to progress people and countries. I always say every dictatorship has a life as long as a political election. Important is that people elect their political government. For instance, in Turkey, we have always upheld the view that elections should not be boycotted, that elections should be held with the greatest participation, and we have urged the Sunni and Shiite groups not to boycott the elections. Yes, the elections are not the perfect example of elections, but elections are elections, and they should attend those elections. But they didn't listen to us, and the Sunni Arabs boycotted the elections in a great majority. Now, after the elections, Mr. Jaferi being elected as the prime minister and Mr. Talabani as the new president, the preparation of the new constitution and the referendum to be held in the fall are very important steps for the establishment of a proper regime in Iraq. The real process will start after these initiatives. Turkey it has close ties with the neighboring countries. The prime minister, or the new leader of Palestine, Mahmoud Abbas, made his first state visit to Turkey. He met with the president, the prime minister. He was also my guest. I talked to him for one day. And whatever he said made a good impression on me. Mahmoud Abbas, as a person who suffered for years and years, wants now to put an end to bloodshed and tears. We told him that we would support him in his friendly and peaceful initiatives. We told him which legislative initiatives he could do, and I recommended that I could send over my experts to him so that he can build up his system. We are not supporting giving any political or any other support, but only our support is limited in the legislative field. A week has passed since then, and the Prime Minister of Iraq, Mr. Jaferi, visited Turkey. He came at a time when President Cesar was abroad, and I was his deputy. So we discussed with him many issues, Iraq and Iraq's future, we told him which should be the proper basis for elections. We talked about Kirkuk, the Turkmens, not because these were important points for Turkey, but these are issues. The Turkmens are an integral part of the Iraqi people. Kirkuk is not a Turkmen city, but an Iraqi city, and should preserve its multi-ethnic identity. And it cannot be under the hegemony of one of the ethnic groups. And I saw that he also shared with me the same opinions. And he said that those elements who did not participate in the elections would take part in the government and also in the constitutional reforms. Also in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, also in line with the Greater Middle East project, and also within the framework of the Sea Island meeting, We can do all our best, not as an intermediary, that could be an exaggeration, but whatever proper role is attributed to Turkey, we are ready to assume that role. And we will be contributing in any area in which we find ourselves competent. For instance, I believe that Turkey is stronger and more convincing in the settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict rather than other countries, because Turkey is in good relations with both countries. Turkey was the first state to recognize in 1948 when the Israeli state was established, and Turkey and Israel always had good relations in the military, security and technological fields. Our relations have progressed every day. And I think Turkey is one of the countries which is one of the most reliable countries for Israel. And also for the Arab countries, Turkey is a reliable, high prestige country. There are other countries who have lost their prestige, who are tired, and it is not possible for them to assume responsibility in this issue. And I hope Turkey will be conducting this role with great success.
We have 13 minutes left. I think we can take a couple more questions. Yasemin?
My name is Yasemin Çongar. I'm the representative of Milliyet Daily in Washington. In your statement, you mentioned that the American Congress should not be forced into a position of passing a judgment on historical issues, that politicians should not act on local calculations. I think that you will be discussing also with Honorable Hastert, the Armenian issue. You will be mentioning that this issue is always put forward by the Armenians. I would like to ask a question in this framework. In the recent times, Turkey has assumed a more open stance for the discussion of the Armenian issue. For years and years, this issue had to be discussed by the historians. And the AK Party has assumed an open-minded policy, which was also appreciated by President Bush. At a meeting held in the Turkish Parliament, many people, while you were absent and you were coming here, the spokesman of the Turkish government, the Minister of Justice, Cemil Çiçek, criticized a meeting that was supposed to be held at the Bosphorus University on the Armenian issue, and the minister said that such a meeting would be stabbing Turkey from the back. How do you interpret the statement of the Minister of Justice? Do you think that this reflects Turkey's general attitude and your attitude and the government's attitude regarding the discussion of the Armenian issue in Turkey? How do you evaluate that statement by Minister Çiçek? Thank you, Mrs. Çongar. Indeed, after I left Turkey, there was a discussion in the Turkish Parliament, and after that discussion, a meeting which was planned to be held at the Bosphorus University was cancelled, and that cancellation created a major debate in Turkey. I am informed of this issue from the newspaper articles that were conveyed to me. Mrs. Çongar, you mentioned that I also dwelled on this issue in my statement.
There has been a propaganda for the last 90 years stating that whatever was done to the Armenians in 1915 by Turkey was genocide. There are circles who accept this view. There are others who do not accept it. There are theses, and we are informed of all the views recently in the Russian Duma and the Polish House of Representatives. Certain resolutions are being adopted for recognizing the Armenian genocide issue, and the same applies for the states. These are realities, facts of life. We are sorry for that, because Turkey has not witnessed or did a genocide in its entire history. This is what we believe in as a people, as a government, as the state. And that belief we have expressed to the public opinion in the whole world. And we have written letters to all countries involved that we are ready to establish an independent commission to investigate what has happened in 1915, that Turkey would be ready to open up all her archives. And we also proposed that Turkey would assist any group, any independent group to investigate into this matter. We wrote a letter to President Koçaryan, to the British Parliament, and so on and so forth. What Turkey, the message Turkey tries to give by all these initiatives is as follows. Don't take one-sided issues. If a parliament of a country takes a resolution against the parliament of another state, is not correct. This is what we are saying. We have to take this issue out from a propaganda dimension. We have to be investigated into this matter by means of an independent experts commission. This is my view. There are many resolution proposals coming to the American Congress on the Armenian issue. Most of them have not been discussed, debated, and I believe that everybody has a positive responsibility to share in this issue. Turkey would like to put an end to all these discussions. Armenia is our neighbor, but we don't have any diplomatic relations. After the independence of Armenia in 1991, Turkey recognized that independence. There are direct flights between Erivan and Istanbul today, and there is an exchange of visits of NGOs. However, in the Armenian constitution and the Declaration of Independence, there are certain provisions contained which are not acceptable by Turkey, and therefore the establishment of these diplomatic relations have been could not be established. Now, what Mrs. Çongar has said, today there is a law in France. According to that law, denying genocide has become a crime. A person who says no, there hasn't been any such thing, can be put on trial. It has gone even so far that a Turkish diplomat who has made a statement to that effect was put on trial. And Turkey stated that because of diplomatic immunity, such a trial could not be held. But the trial was held, and the court accepted our defense and said that the consul general could not be tried. France is a big country. It is the cradle of democracy and secularism, as we all know. The second example comes from Switzerland. Switzerland is a civilized Western country, and there is a similar law also there. Rejection of
The genocide is sanctionable, and what did Switzerland do? Switzerland declared a red bulletin alarm on a person who has not set foot on Switzerland. And who is this person? He is Professor Yusuf Halaçoğlu, the president of the Turkey's History Association. He is now searched with a red bulletin because he expressed his views on what is genocide and what is not genocide. How can this be considered a democratic initiative? Because freedom of expression is very wisely defined by the European Court of Human Rights. And I quote, freedom of expression does not mean that you make statements that is upheld and accepted by everybody. Freedom of expression means that also shocking ideas can be put to words in a society. This is on one side, and on the other hand, there is a legal provision that bans any rejection of a genocide. Now, is what has recently happened in Turkey similar or not? Yes, it is similar. I don't know the details of the case. If I had been in Turkey, I would have been informed about the minutest detail. But I believe that the Bosphorus University was planning to hold a meeting where the issue would be discussed by the dissident voices. And this caused a debate amongst the professors. Professor İlber Ortaylı criticized that meeting. So the professors themselves were divided into two. And from the Higher Educational Board, there was an intervention, and I think there was also a statement by Ambassador Elekta. And as the spokesman of the government commented on that, he said that what was done by Bosphorus University was wrong, and that this was to be considered as high treason. Actually, I don't know what the plans of the Bosphorus University was, and that is not important. But if dissident issues were going to be discussed there, one should allow them to talk because of the freedom of expression. If we do not want to lose our face, if we do not want to implement double standards, we have to accept what everybody is saying. But again, I don't know what the details are. How the plans were progressed, I have no idea what the background is. But with the naked eye, all I can see is a university wanted to make a gathering of the dissident voices, and some groups felt against that. But I think that objection is wrong. That initiative should not be prevented. This is my personal opinion.
We have only 2-3 minutes left, so if you can keep your question as short as possible, because we have to leave the room by 11:15. There's another event after us, so please keep it short, and I have to end the session.
Hasan Müstazar, Türkiye Gazetesi.
I'm a reporter from the Turkiye newspaper. In your speech, you mentioned that the combining forces are greater than forces dividing us. You have also underlined the strategic dimension of Turkey-U.S. relations. What were the negative impacts on those relations, particularly What was the impact of the emotional stress that was created after government's proposal was rejected by the Turkish parliament? Well, thank you for that question. If that question hadn't come, I would have asked myself, why have I come to United States? Because I am being held as the chief responsible factor for that proposal of the government was rejected by the Turkish parliament. Well, that was during the time when America's intervention to Iraq was being discussed. At that time, the government prepared a proposal with regard to hoisting foreign soldiers and their transfer to Iraqi soil on Turkish territory. That was a request they made to the parliament, and that request was discussed in the Turkish public opinion. I was leading as the speaker the sessions then. I do not want to enter into all the details of the discussion, but everybody had concerns, question marks in their minds, and everybody had a doubt where this would end. I'm speaking very openly and frankly. The representatives of the U.S. Did not make any satisfactory explanations to the Turkish public opinion, to the Turkish parliament, and to the Turkish government. They said we want this to happen and it has to happen by all means. Such an approach cannot be accepted by the Turkish people. Every country has its own priorities, and those national priorities are as important to Turks as they are for the Americans. Obviously, you can reach an agreement where national interests converge. We are a free and democratic country. Our people are represented by the parliament, and the concerns, the question marks of the Turkish public opinion had to be analyzed by the government, and this analysis was not done, was not completed. Everybody looked at one at each other, and then in a closed session the votes were cast, and there were 200 yes votes and 264 nay votes. The reverse. The yes votes were 264 and the no votes were 250. Considering the figures, you would say that it would have been accepted. No. For the rejection, 3 votes were missing, and for the approval, 17 votes were missing, according to the Constitution. So the majority was not found, and this decision was criticized by the Turkish public opinion since then. As the speaker of the Turkish parliament, as the voice of the Turkish people, I take full responsibility on that. And other proposals of the government with regard to the airports, the logistics support, humanitarian aid, they were all approved by the Turkish parliament. The one that was not passed on the 1st of March was not repeated. The other proposals of the government were accepted. And the defense minister of Turkey stated, yes, the first proposal was not accepted, but despite that fact, 4,300 sorties were done by American aircraft. And he said that there was not a major difference from the fact that if the first proposals had been adopted. I think we have to respect the decisions of the parliament, as in the case of the French parliament, German parliament, British parliament, and we have to respect also the decisions of the Turkish parliament. We are a democratic, free and independent country, and we have adopted this decision. All circles who believe that this rejection on the 1st of March was the end of everything were proven proven to be wrong. I personally believe that the 1st of March has started a new but a very healthy process between Turkey and the USA. We got to know each other better. We saw that as an opportunity to establish stronger and more sincere relations. The US and Turkey relations from now onwards will not be built on assumptions or ideas or dreams, but on hard facts, realities. And I don't think that the comments on the press cannot harm our friendship as the parliament, as the government, as our institutions. We are giving even more importance to our relations with the U.S. than in the past. And we believe that we have a great common denominator. The 1st of March has started a new era. At least it has given us the opportunity of getting to know each other better.
And Speaker Erinç, thank you once again for coming to CSIS and sharing your views with us. And we wish you a success in your meeting with Speaker Hastur today and also in your other engagements in the United States. Çok teşekkürler geldiğiniz için. And thank you, General Scowcroft, for coming and introducing our speaker.
Thank you.